You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined today by my co-host, as always, Dan. Hello, Dan.
Hello, Kyle.
I feel like I'm a TV show host, like calling people down the aisle. And we're also joined by our co-host, Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hey, Kyle, great to be back, yeah.
Yeah, so these two are going to be competing today to win the grand prize, which is going to be a brand new car!
Actually, okay, well, perfect. I do need one of those, so...
Yeah, me too, actually, so...
Trick is, we don't ship internationally, so... I guess I have to take it by default since I'm the only one in the U.S. Whoops!
Probably be some crummy Chevy or something American-made anyway.
Gotta read the fine print, guys. Gotta read that fine print. But hey, speaking of challenges, segue! We're going to talk about the CivCast challenge for May, because we had some questions on Reddit, and I think they were all good questions. Dan, do you quickly want to recap the rules as is? Just so everyone knows, you can find these rules on the website. It's kyledempsterstudios.com/CivCast. We always put the rules up there, and we're starting to do it over on our lovely subreddit. But Dan, give us a quick recap of what people are actually doing, and then we're going to tackle some of these remaining questions.
Yeah, for sure. So our May challenge running from May 7th to 27th is, I think it's a pretty straightforward one. There are some nuances to it. Essentially, you're doing a 2v2v2 team-based game, which, just to clarify, you will need to set up through the multiplayer menu, Kyle. I know that was one of the questions that people had that I perhaps should have clarified last time. You could play the game with all AI, but in order to set up a 2v2v2 team-based game, you will need to set it up via the multiplayer menu. So just to make sure that we nip that in the bud. The civ you're picking any civ. Your opponents can be random. They could be any opponents of your choice. I know that Wouter had a post on our Reddit, r/CivCast, where he was asking people who they wanted him to play as and against, and some people had some really cool input there, talking about avoid the OP civs or play against the OP civs, which, knowing how good Wouter is at the game, I'd probably have to agree with. The map that we're looking at is continents, because that will generally allow you to segment off your team's starting place from other teams, insofar as that's how the start bias works. The victory type, and this is something I'm fairly certain we talked about last week, but we're doing cultural victory only. And the reason we're doing that is because Wouter has this fantastic Wouter's, what is it officially called? Strategy session?
Session. You got it.
Yeah. Cool. Voucher strategy session, which was part of our Patreon rewards, which has some really fantastic cultural strategy tips. I was listening to it the other day, and I mean, if I go for a culture victory in the near future, I know exactly how to do it now because I sucked at it before. So we're going to do cultural victory for that. Share any tips you have, too, on our Reddit for cultural victories. People like me who are plebs when it comes to cultural victories will appreciate that. Your map size is standard. Your difficulty, as I think is usually the case with CivCast challenges, is going to be Emperor. Your speed and resources is standard. And yeah, I think that about covers it, Kyle.
But Dan, so I have some questions to ask you.
Oh man, I don't want to call on this student again. This student's such a pain in the... Okay,
Dan,
Kyle.
Dan. I have questions. So actually, over on our subreddit, which is simply CivCast, nice and easy to find, we got some awesome questions from people out there, the great listeners who have joined us over on the subreddit. This person might have the best name on Reddit, potentially, which is Oscar the Singing Hobo, has asked, are we allowed to choose the other civs, or do they need to be random?
I'm glad you asked that, Oscar. And by the way, your singing voice is beautiful. The answer to that question is really, it's up to you. I think that insofar as the opponents are concerned, I know last time we really hyper-specified who you're going to go against. And I don't want to be, you know, as restrictive this time. So I'm not going to say to you, you know, you should do this, you should do this. But maybe one thing that I would suggest is play against civs that have, you know, cultural victories as their kind of focus or as their principal victory type, that might make it a little bit more challenging for you, I think. Right? I mean, that would make sense. You don't
make sense.
Yeah. I mean, who could they maybe think about putting as an opponent if we're looking for civs that are very hyper culture focused?
That's a good. Greece is that Greece has some stuff for culture. Who else has culture? Does India have any culture? I can't remember if Gandhi's perks are culture related.
No, I don't believe so. Wouter?
I would go with the Congo. They are really good at cultural stuff.
Yeah, that's a good one. Would be a good opponent. Yeah, for sure. So, but I mean, there's no specific restrictions on it. But if you want to have a challenge, definitely go for one of the civs that errs towards challenge. Another civ that would be really good to go against would be Brazil. They're very heavily culture focused. And they're a fun one to play against too, because they're not hyper aggressive in my games against them. And that might make it a little bit easier for you if you want easy.
Or you could go with a real challenge. So bottom line there, we're looking at, you can choose random for your own team and the other team, or you can specify whatever you want to do. It is up to you. Dan, another question for you from Daw13 says, to win the challenge, says it, does the team have to win or does the player have to beat everyone, including your teammate?
Daw13. I had to do that ever since I saw his name. I think we're going to go with team. Because this is a team-based challenge. And the inspiration for this was that big Civ as eSport multiplayer challenge that Kyle linked out on Reddit 2 weeks ago. And as it relates to that challenge, they're doing it as team victory. So we're in Civ, we're always so self-centered and so self-focused. And team is never really part of our lexicon. So I figured we could add a little bit of a team aspect to it this time around. So yes, the victory will be a team-based victory. But, you know, if you want to go stab your teammate in the back and be a real asshole like that, I mean, I guess we can't stop.
Hey, another question from, I can't read this from here. DeepBlue64 says, so are you allied from the start of the scenario?
Yo, DeepBlue64, hold on a sec. We got some Watergate going on here. Oh, wait, no. DeepBlue's not Watergate. DeepBlue, that's Deep Throat. DeepBlue is the chess playing computer. DeepBlue's the chess playing computer. I'm an idiot. Sorry, DeepBlue.
Questioning what all is discussed on this show now. What is our rating?
Let's just skip on past that. DeepBlue, thank you for emailing in between your chess world dominance. You know what? I completely forgot the question. Kyle, can you repeat it?
Are you allied from the start in this scenario?
You are, yeah.
There you go. So there you have it, everyone. Those are the remaining questions that we had sitting around on the Reddit. I know we actually took the time to post some quick replies there, but want to clear it up for anyone that's looking to join. So as always, just to kind of recap the rules, if anyone's a new listener to the show, CivCast Challenge has morphed a bit. It used to be like a weekly thing. Now it is a monthly challenge. So you can go over, like I said, kyledempsterstudios.com/CivCast. There's going to be rules down there. We have a submission form. We ask people to put in just some general info, like your Steam name and an email address and things like that, just so we can keep the leaderboard tidy on our end. And the way to win this is we're always going for who can win this challenge or complete the goal of the challenge in the quickest time. So you're going for the lowest turn count possible, and then Dan will call them out at the end of the month. I just thought of that the other day when I was looking through how the rules are written up on the site. I was like, man, I need to clarify some of this because we kind of ad hoc'd a couple things along the way and like moved pieces in and out. So the other thing is submitting your victory condition. Used to be you had to use hashtag CivCast Challenge in your victory tweet on Twitter, but now we're also opening it up to Reddit. And I think this is a great thing because on our subreddit, you can make your own post to tell the story of your victory, but we're asking that your final victory tally is actually listed in the sticky that's up at the top of the page. So it's the one with the official rules and all that stuff. Want to post it there so we can find it easily at the end of the month and just, you know, have a nice concise list. But those are the two ways to submit. Dan will call them out at the end of the month. We love to give shout outs to people that are doing it. It looks like people are off to a great start. I mean, we announced this 7 days ago now, and I mean, we've already got a couple victories posted up there, some great stories from people, nice long posts. So those are much, much, much appreciated. And then they've got, I love it when people, someone even gave some ideas of how we can do some new challenges in the future. I know someone that posted yesterday by the name of Pendon suggested maybe doing an actual listener multiplayer game as one of our upcoming challenges. That's something we might have to set up maybe a month in advance, like a month before usual, just so people can actually figure out how to, that all would work. But that could be a very interesting idea. You know, we're getting people in to do the multiplayer with the AI right now, but multiplayer with actual living human beings would be pretty cool too. So keep those ideas coming. Feel free to suggest things to us and take it all into consideration. Transitioning away from that, last week we had an awesome discussion about the new sieves that are coming with the Digital Deluxe adjustment, for lack of a better word. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's episode, go check out episode 32. It was like more digital bang for your digital buck, I think is the title. We talked about how Firaxis released some information saying, we recognize that people that purchased the Digital Deluxe Edition did not get their full money's worth in our eyes, depending on what country you were in when you purchased it. We broke down all the math as to how that worked out. And the real story here is that Firaxis is now going to do two new civilizations and three new leaders for us, for Digital Deluxe owners. And assuming everyone should be able to buy those, if you're not a Digital Deluxe owner already, you'll be able to buy them, but it's going to put way more value in that Digital Deluxe edition, or, you know, package, whatever you want to say. And we took a lot of time at the end of the episode and speculated about what civilizations and leaders we expected to come down the pipe, because they gave us some vague outlines of where they're going to come from and geography wise. I think also people on Twitter seemed to dig our conversation, and people that maybe didn't even listen to Civcast, I was listening into some conversations that were happening about, you know, guys, at the end we talked about how things might be a little bit politically charged if they were to add a civ into the game, things like that. And I noticed a lot of people talking about similar things on Twitter. They were saying, like, well, when is Stalin coming to the game? And when is Hitler coming? And blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I kind of chimed in here and there and gave the general idea of our thoughts. But it's a great conversation that people are still having. People are speculating what's going to come. We have some very obvious thoughts on that. Like I said, go listen to last week's. But one of our awesome Twitter followers, Zen Saiyan, took the time to, number one, open a Reddit account so he could come over to the sub. So awesome. You get 10,000 points. You can redeem that for that free car. And he put together even more so a little list here about his own speculations for it. So, guys, do we want to take some time and discuss these bold predictions he posted on the sub?
Let's do it.
Okay, so he posted, finalizing my predictions for the three Digital Deluxe leaders. He listed them in three different categories, actually four. He said the bold leaders would be Songhai, Siam, and Indonesia. Bolder so would be Carthage and Ethiopia. Spicy, with a little emoji in there, kudos.
Spicy take.
Is Zimbabwe. And the runners-up, which he thinks are going to be long shots, would be Tunisia, Thailand, and the Philippines. He says, dream big, Africa and Southeast Asia only. Yeah, that's the outlines they gave us. So what do you guys think on this? Dan, do you want to give your take first?
I mean, Zimbabwe is an interesting one. It is indeed a spicy take. Zimbabwe's history is peppered. Get it? Peppered. Oh, God. You know what? I got to be honest. I wasn't even trying for that. So, but I'm bummed. Zimbabwe's history is peppered, though, with a lot of colonial ventures, and really up until the 20th century, and really after the 20th century, they've been a country that's been in flux, in turmoil. I don't know a lot about Zimbabwe's history as a country. I'm not going to lie. I don't necessarily know. I don't know. I mean, I guess there'd be, well, I know for sure there'd be enough there. I don't want to say there wouldn't be enough there. I because I'm not familiar enough with it, but I'm just wondering. One thing I'm really thinking that we're likely to see in this these three DLC civs that are coming out is I think we're going to see, and I'm willing to make this spicy prediction, at least two female leaders, because we don't have a hell of a lot of female leaders in the base game right now. And I don't know if Zimbabwe has a history of that. I was looking through some of these option civs that we've got, and I mean, there's certainly in the history of African civilizations, there weren't a lot of female leaders. You know, Carthage in the last game, which is one of the bolder predictions he has here. They had Dido, and Dido is a great example of a female, historically relevant female leader. But with Carthage, you also have Hannibal. And other than that, from this list, I'm not really sure who I see as having a tangible, viable female leader, because I really do have to say, I think that that is something, A, that they could use more of in the game, and B, will likely go for. So kind of all over the place with my answer there, but I guess to summarize, of all these that he said, I don't see the Songhai as coming back. I think last week we talked about Siam as being very viable, perhaps a modern Vietnam. Indonesia, Kyle, you said you don't think they're going to come back. I agree. Carthage, I see them coming back at some point. Ethiopia, maybe. Zimbabwe, it'd be fine. But I think South Africa might be a bit more viable if we're looking at that region specifically.
How about you, Wouter? What's your take? I think those are all good thoughts, Dan.
I think it's difficult. And we talked a little bit about it before the show, because I wouldn't mind seeing Carthage back into the game in the form of Dido or whoever. But the problem with that is I think a lot of people will start complaining again that this is another of those pseudo-European nations in Africa, while there are so many true African countries that didn't get representation yet. So I kind of feel that they don't want to go that way, because they should probably expect these kinds of discussions coming to them as well. And with that, yeah, it's going to be really difficult to please everybody. But I kind of hope still that they maybe take a leap of faith and go for South Africa, because that would be really cool. But yeah, Zimbabwe could be a thing as well.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And this is kind of going to segue us here in a minute into our other conversation about city-states. You guys found something cool on Reddit that we're going to call out. But thinking of Carthage, you know, they're already a city-state in the game, right? They're the military one, is that right? Domination-focused?
They are. They're the really good military one.
Are they the ones that you get, what is their bonus? You get something really good for being...
An extra trade route for every campus.
That's it. That thing is
not campus, encampment, sorry.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that thing is so powerful to have it.
But there are multiple, for example, for Indonesia, you have Jakarta as a trade city-state already as well. So they have done it before, that they had a city-state in the game and that they took out that city-state and made it a full-fledged nation.
Was that Venice?
But as I said, at Venice, but I believe it was Sweden as well. That was Stockholm in C5, and then they removed Stockholm and put Sweden as a country into a full civ in the game. And that's been said here on the Reddit as well already. And the big problem with that in this case is that city states are less generic. They all have their special bonus. So removing them from the game will be a lot more involved than taking them out in C5, for example.
I definitely agree with that. And I think I shot that back on someone's comment too. And at one point I was like, yeah. And even if I didn't write it, I know I was mulling that over myself and thinking, you know, is it, I wonder, is that a big deal? I mean, how specific are some of these bonuses? Maybe I'm just not thinking of it correctly, but in some ways, you know, city-states definitely have some specific bonuses. But at the same time, I wonder if you could still kind of just swap it with a very similar city-state. It's not really what they would want to do, I'm sure. You know, that's just extra man hours for, you know, just extra man hours sake. But we get some, so they all get something basic. So it's like, okay, you send an envoy to them, you get some signs. Send more envoys, you get more signs. Then you get the special perk at the end, the suzerain bonus. So I kind of wonder if it would be hard for them to do that, or if at the end of the day, it's like, meh, here's another city that was kind of nearby and this works well enough and they call it a day.
I mean, for some of them that could happen, but if you take Carthage, for example, Carthage, the reason why you get that trade routes for encampments is because Carthage was a big trade empire, and they were quite militaristic as well. Therefore, they link that together. There's no clear opposite or alternative, I would say, that fits the bill for that in the region so much. So that's going to be difficult. I think the bonuses for the city-states are that much specialized towards them mostly, that there wouldn't be just a one-on-one analog quickly found for it. And I don't think they would go for that either. I think they would rather spend time to add some extra city states and another civilization than take one away that is already there. I think they should focus also on adding more content and not swapping things out and replacing it partially and stuff like that.
I agree. That sounds like it would get muddy overall, from everything from just plugging things into the game program-wise to, you know, you'd be swapping all kinds of stuff around. And at some point, it's just like, wow, that's a lot of movement. I would say that Carthage, I mean, if they'd be some sort of militaristic trade civilization in the game, that sounds very interesting to me. I would like that. So I don't know. Someone also, Zensane also suggested maybe Cambodia as one. I see he posted that again on his little post here. It's at the very bottom. And then we also had some others. Let's see. Someone said, is this Webster 0105 says Singapore, Myanmar, Pakistan. I don't think we'll see Taiwan though. So any thoughts on those?
Well, Pakistan, I think, is far too modern in the context of how long the country in its current iteration has existed. Myanmar, I don't know enough about the country other than their colonial history to have a fair assessment of that. Singapore is well situated as a city-state. You could maybe do it like a Venice circa Civ 5, where it's like a city-state Civ. I could see that for Singapore. But I don't know about either of those three. I don't think we'll see Taiwan either, because again, very, very modern construct of a state. Cambodia is interesting. The Khmer people have an extensive history. Modern Cambodian history is a lot more a difficult subject and much more, harried, so to speak. But ancient Khmer history is very rich. Again, I keep saying this, but another history I don't know all that much about. I'm not a Southeast Asian historian, but I know that there's a lot of material there. So I think that we're likely along the lines of what Zensane's saying, try saying that 10 times fast, to see a Southeast Asian civ based around the Indochina area, almost certainly, I would say.
Let's see. I think so. Someone else, VT Matt, who's been super interacting with us on the subreddit, has said maybe Ethiopia or Morocco. So I think we just mentioned Ethiopia, but Morocco. Any thoughts on Morocco? Did we talk about them yet?
I don't think we've talked about it yet. Morocco would be a really interesting nation. I think it's less. It has less of the problem. What I said with Carthage, that it's like a pseudo-European nation. Mm-hmm. Morocco has built itself as a true like African nation with its own identity, more like Arabian identity because of the Islam and the Arabian influences that were there a lot. And I think Morocco could be an interesting nation. It has a lot to pull from. Then again, I'm not sure if they would do that. I hope actually that they go for more like below the sub-Saharan nations.
And we also have to consider that they were added in Civ 5 with Brave New World. So Morocco already made an appearance. Now that doesn't mean that they're not going to come back. But you know, the idea is if they're going to try and go for something completely fresh and new, Morocco would not be one of their picks then.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you guys like Morocco in Civ 5?
Not really. I never really wanted to play as them. They weren't that great, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. They did get a bonus, though. I'm looking at it on the Civ Wikia. They got a +3 gold and +1 culture for each trade route with a different Civ or city state. And the trade route owners received +2 gold for each trade route sent to Morocco. So they were that bonus is a little bit similar to what we have with Egypt and, you know, getting the extra food and stuff when trading with her. But so very, very, very trade heavy. They got the Berber cavalry and some interesting stuff like that. So, I mean, we could see them come back. That might be interesting in the sense that, you know, that we just talked about Carthage being kind of a trade military state. At least that would be one of those extra trade sort of things. If they decided to go with those bonuses and make them similar, you'd be getting another strong trader in the game. Not sure how well that's, or how much that's needed.
I remember them pretty well from Brave New World. I kept running into them in my randomized games. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of interactions with them. They weren't particularly aggressive. They were definitely economic focused. And to what you guys are saying, though, they aren't overwhelming. So maybe they deserve a redo. But I don't think that we'll see that. I don't see Morocco as being likely. He mentions Tunisia, which would be interesting. A lot of ancient Tunisian history is Carthage. But yeah, you know what? The African one, I think, you know, it's all up in the air. It's up for grabs. I think there's no sure bet. I mean, we could go back to an old one from Civ 5, or we could see something completely brand new like we did in Civ 5 with the Songhai, which I'm pretty sure no one would have predicted.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what we get here. This feels like a real curveball, maybe more so than the previous DLC we got. I know we really didn't have huge tip-offs to what was coming down the pipe, but this is this feels a little bit different. I mean, at least in this time, they've kind of given us locations around the world of where to look. So I don't know. There's a little bit of detective work going on with this that I'm enjoying. And I'm very curious to know what this timeline looks like. Like, when are these civs going to come into our hands? Because I don't think I saw anything about that. Does anyone? They didn't really give us any timeline, did they?
They didn't give a timeline. I hope it's soon, though.
Same. And we kind of played our, you know, detective game last time when it came to when they were going to release these patches that included new stuff. And we kind of had it pretty... Well, I don't know. It felt like we had it nailed down, and then they flipped the table on us. So I don't know. I guess we're maybe not the best guessers when it comes to the release date, but I'm hoping it's in the next week or two. I think I feel like anything longer than that, and they might, you know, it'll kind of read as a little bit of radio silence when it comes to this news. I mean, they teased it. They gave some specifics of locale, and then nothing new. So curious if it comes out in the next week. I wonder if we have it by at least one of them by next weekend.
Thoughts? I'm wondering if they're going to wait until like June or something to that effect so that they can just call it the summer patch, right? Because it looks, they've been doing patches based on seasons. So I think naturally folding into summer, which is sooner than you think, might make sense. I don't know.
That is true. Yeah,
I think it will be a while. It's going to be a bit in between. I think they usually like to promote it a little bit with a stream and such as well. I haven't seen anything of that, so I think it's going to be a bit.
I think those are both valid thoughts on it. My counterpoint would be, in the past, though, with those patches, they would say, like, on Monday, hey, we have a patch in mind. Because I remember the first time around, we were expecting, like, it to be a month off. On Monday, they're like, we have a patch in mind. Thursday, here's our live stream. Okay, we still think we've got a month for this thing. Friday, here's the patch. Enjoy it. And here's your new civs. So this might be an interesting change in their release cycle if they do decide to give it another month in between. I mean, that would kind of change the game of how long they were taking in the past, because it was rather quick turnaround from what I remember. Let's go from this conversation, because we're already covering a lot of city-states, to something very interesting you both found on Reddit. So credit to both Dan and Valter. Looking at a list here of all the city-states in the game. And Dan, do you maybe want to give us a quick recap of what we're looking at, and Valter can give us some thoughts as well here?
Sure. The Reddit user Aztuk, A-Z-T-U-K, posted onto the regular Civ subreddit, which is r/Civ, this fantastic city-state tier list by victory type. And you know we love our tier lists. And this tier list lists all of these city-states broken down by, I guess, what they add to your ability to win by a certain victory type. So in other words, he has a best tier, a great tier, a good tier, an average tier, and a bad tier. And then he has them broken up by, or he or she, I shouldn't just assume, domination, science, cultural, and religion. And unsurprisingly, there are some civs who I think we would be universally lauded as being great in a certain victory type at the top in the S tier. So, I mean, I would look at science first, but Valter, I don't know which one you wanted to take first.
I didn't have any particular one in mind. I think he lists some pretty interesting city-states in the top. Some of them I agree with, some of them I agreed less with, but I think it's a really interesting list at least. And city-states in general, we haven't discussed them too often, and it's good.
So let's quickly recap who takes the top of all of these lists. So for domination victory, we're looking at I'm going to do a terrible job at pronouncing these names. People are going to laugh and be offended.
No, you're not. You'll do fine.
Deep breath. Okay, we're looking at Carthage, Cabal, Valletta. Science victory, we got Geneva, Hong Kong, Stockholm. Cultural victory, we have, how do you say that?
Antananarivo.
Antananarivo. Kumasi, how do we say? See, I told you I'm going to butcher these. Kumasi?
Kumasi.
Okay, yeah. Great. Look at this. And for religion, we have Leventa, Valletta, and Yerevan. So, Wouter, you mentioned you have some that you disagree with right off the bat. I want to highlight some of those, and we can also talk about what their perks are for each of these, and maybe why you disagree that that's the one that takes top of the chart.
Sure. So what he does is, for the religious victory specifically, is I don't know if inside that list it's an order as well, but Levant is, for example, the top one for the S tier. And I don't think Levant is that amazing as a religious one. For example, Jerusalem and Kandy, the other two religious city-states, are on the A tier, and I would definitely put Leventa as well. Leventa gives you the ability to build the colossal head improvement, and I never want to build a colossal head when I'm playing. So besides the basic bonus that it gives, I don't think Leventa is better. In that case, Jerusalem and Candy both take precedence, for me at least, above Leventa.
Interesting. And then, I mean, you can look at this how you want, people. We're gonna make sure you have links to see how this chart goes, because it is really broken down, you know, by tiers. There's the best tier with S, tier A is great, tier B good, tier C average, and tier D is bad. And you know, they're all clumped in here in different levels. To your point, Wouter, we don't really know if he's trying to title some of these as better within each block. So, you know, I don't know if Leventa is better than Yerevan or not, but it is a really interesting concept. Like you said, we really haven't talked about city-states in here or on the show very much, especially given how important they are. One of the ones I kind of want to look at here, because, you know me, I love my... actually, wait, where is it? Do we have... There's no economic in this thing, huh?
No, it doesn't
have is not a victory.
Yeah, that's true. I still want that to be listed, though. Like, that makes a good point about what's victory, but I kind of want to know which ones are best in that, too.
I mean, the economic city-states are in there, and usually they score quite high because they're pretty good, but yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, oh yeah, you're right, because Zanzibar gets, where is it? Zanzibar is under science for tier B. That's a little bit awkward. I mean, definitely kudos for making the list, but I think I would have rather not so much seen victory as much as, which city-states are considered better than others. But back to what I was going to say, I wanted to look at the domination ones, because we were just talking about Carthage and how cool they were. Any disagreements with these? Because they are top three, like I said, was Carthage with plus one trade route by encampment, Kabul with plus 20% XP for military units, and Valletta has the ability to buy units with faith. Anyone saying nay to those?
Well, first of all, Valletta has a different bonus. You can buy encampment district buildings with fate, I believe. So it's not units.
Ooh, that's a good catch. So there's a little bit of a typo here in that.
And beyond that, I mean, Carthage is for every victory, Carthage is a good city state because you get extra trade routes, and trade routes are what makes your empire run the best.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, Carthage also promotes building more encampments, which should be good for domination victory. That being said, I'm not certain if it's that specifically amazing for domination victory. I would rather have something like Kabul, because extra experience makes your units stronger, makes them level up faster, which means you can use their level up for healing. I prefer that a lot more. And also, I like Breslov a lot because I use cavalry quite a lot, and there are hill tiles everywhere. And a plus 5 strength, that is a huge boost. So I would actually, Breslov here is in the B tier actually, and it would definitely be an A tier, if not S tier.
So, and I also want to verify or, you know, make the announcement that you are correct, Wouter. You have the right idea for Valletta's victor or their suzerain bonus. It says allows a suzerain to consume faith to purchase urban centers and military buildings in the cities, reduces faith costs. So a little bit of a typo here in these notes that you don't actually have the ability to buy units with faith so much as the buildings. Any thoughts on science, Dan? Do you have any takes on these?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I disagree a little bit. There's one for militaristic. I really like this, the city-states who, when you have them as your suzerain, or you are the suzerain of, pardon me, they give you kind of unique improvements, like the religious head icons, which was, off the top of my head, I can't remember which one of that is. But Granada, which I notice he has in his C tier, his average tier for militaristic, is technically a militaristic city state. And I remember, I think it was actually in my, I want to say it was like my second or third game interacting with them. I suzerained them basically right away because they're right on my doorstep. And builders can construct the Alcazar improvement, which protects military units and provides a culture bonus. I think that they are a fantastic example of a city state that really splits the difference, because the militaristic bonus they give you is very defense focused. Plus, they allow you to load up on culture. And interestingly enough, I think he has Granada in his A tier, which is his great tier for culture. So there's an example maybe of a civ that is meant to be one thing, but ends up being better in another thing. The city state that I love more than any for science victories in this game, and it's not, I mean, they're not super complex in their suzerain bonus, is Hattusa, or I think it's Hattutha. When you are suzerain of them, they provide you with one copy of each strategic resource you have revealed but do not own. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm not the kind of person who branches out and builds a ton of cities. Wouter, we've talked about this in the past. But I do a lot of scouting, and I do a lot of scouting early on. And certainly, I have used this bonus. I can think of, like, in one of the games where I drove hard into a science victory with China, I remember explicitly having Hattusa as a city-state that I leaned heavily on, because there were a lot of strategic resources I saw on islands that were otherwise occupied, or islands that were too small to build a city on, those little islands where they might be only 3 or 4 hexes wide, but they hold a strategic resource. And Hattusa allows you to gain that resource by revealing it. And that is, I think, an outstanding suzerain bonus that I remember specifically interacting with and thinking was OP. So he has them as his 5th ranked science-based victory city state behind Geneva, Hong Kong, Stockholm, and Carthage. And I would definitely put them above Stockholm. I would definitely put them above Carthage. Geneva is really good. I don't know if I put them above Geneva. And Hong Kong is more kind of production-based, but it is production that could be used for science. So shout out to Hattusa, which I think is a fantastic science-based city-state.
The reason why Hong Kong is often so high in these lists, also for the religion victory, is because it provides a plus 20% production towards city projects. And especially for the religion victory, you're going to do a lot of city projects just to push out more faith. And the same goes for the science victory, I think, that he goes for, is that you want to do a couple of those research grants in your science cities so you get more great person points and science. And with the production bonus from Hong Kong, you can do them faster and thus gain more out of it. I'm not so sure if I like Hattusa that much. I think it's generally better to settle for just settle a city for a strategic resource is, in my opinion, a perfectly fine thing, even if it's such a small island. And if not, and I really need it, I will just buy it from the AI or something like that. I'd rather have the bonus from Geneva, which is by far the best for a science victory, plus 15% extra science. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'll agree. And that, I mean, that's when you're at peace. And I mean, you're absolutely right. That is easily the best for science, because if you're going science victory, you're probably playing defensive. You're probably not trying to be at war. And later on in the game, when the AI has calmed down a little bit, you know, settled down from all their early game aggression, it's hugely beneficial.
This just reminds me of how much I like this new way of doing city-states. I mean, this to me it puts real value in a system where it was a little bit loose before. I mean, the fact that we can sit here and discuss our opinions of what city-state is better than another, I think they've done a really good job in Civ 6 of kind of flushing these abilities out. I mean, it gives you a reason to want a different city-state to like appear in your game versus another. And it also affects your gameplay in a way that, you know, if you're surrounded by certain city-states, maybe you want to shift your focus at some point. I like a list like this because it really highlights and reminds me of all those unique bonuses they get. I mean, this has me craving like going into a game, discovering new city-states and trying to win them over just from looking at this list.
City-state interaction is one of my favorite parts of this game. I think they've done it extremely well.
Yeah, they made a great choice in doing it this way. And I wanted to shout out like the trade city-states as well, because they are, in my opinion, the best type of city-state usually, mainly because you build so many commercial hubs and you get plus four or gold in every commercial hub if you have only three envoys there. And with six envoys, you gain plus eight gold in every commercial hub. That's so much gold that you're going to get. I love it.
I agree. I also really wonder, I mean, I don't want to dive fully into this conversation, but in the past, in a couple different episodes, we've talked about what we think is going to happen with different expansions and diplomacy and stuff. And you know, I guess I just want to reiterate, my hope is whatever they do with diplomacy, if they really bring more light onto these city states and, you know, with the envoys, which I have to feel they'll do something envoy related. I mean, man, that will be such a juicy expansion pack to the game. I mean, you've already got a system that's very, very engaging. I mean, you really fight to become, friends with these city states. And if you start to slap on extra layers to that, I mean, you're just, that is a good recipe for success in Civ 6, I think. Now we're getting a little bit, we kind of passed over this question in last week's episode. We shouted out to listeners. Black Mountain on emailed us actually and had asked us a question regarding what civilizations we think are best for different play styles at different speeds. And we really didn't dive into this because we were super short on time. Thought maybe we could just take a couple more minutes here in this episode and kind of touch on this. I think Voucher, I don't remember, I think you got some time to chime in on this, talking about how certain civs, you know, that are more unit focused kind of go by the wayside faster. England is one of those that I always talk about suffers from a very fast play speed because they have a couple, they have the Redcoats and their Sea Dog units, and they both expire quickly. But I kind of wanted to toss it back to you guys to just even check in to see what speeds do you play most often in your Civ games. Dan, do you want to maybe start us off with that?
I usually just play the standard speed, the one that's recommended. I guess I haven't really explored that enough, but Voucher inspired me, a couple months ago, I guess, now to try out the online speed. And it was fun. I mean, you know, it's certainly none of us are, we don't have much experience getting Civ games done in one sitting. And, you know, if you want to get a game done in like a 4 or 5 hour sitting, online speed works. I know, Voucher, you did your deity challenge, I think, at online speed, right?
Yeah, I did it when I stream Civilization. I always play on online speed and even offline as well because I got so used to it. And the reason is I can just finish a game in more or less 3 hours. And that's a perfect time for me to stream it because after 3 hours, you tend to get a bit tired.
I can agree with that. I think overall online speed has also been a great success for them. It really hits that sweet spot for me. I know when we first started the show and things, people were a little bit nervous. I think we got an email here or there saying, you know, does online speed really retain the kind of enjoyment of a standard Civ game? And I really think it does. I think to take this too far might be beating a dead horse, but, you know, it really, you do run the risk of your units going too quickly. And also something else that I don't remember if we talked about this on the show or off air, But I saw this on Twitter. There seems to be a little bit of discrepancy with some of the admirals and things like that that you can get in the game that turn into ironclads and battleships. People are getting, at least on Twitter, were getting a little irked about that because people were winding up with ironclads well before they made their historical appearance. And I can kind of attest that there is something a little funky in some of my games where I'm getting the great admiral that does a battleship way early on. I mean, people are sailing around in frigates, and I've got a battleship or two in my armada, and it's a little bit strange. Have you guys noticed any timing issues like that?
Yeah, especially with the great admirals, that is a thing. And the new wonder that they added that gives you a free great admiral and allows you to use the ability twice, the Muslim at Halicarnassus, also actually extends that problem way more. Especially if you play England a lot, which I know you do, Cal, that becomes a thing that because you go through the great admiral so quickly and there are only a certain amount in the deck, you will get those good great admirals faster than your technology progresses. And if you build the Muslim at Halicarnassus, play a little bit of an island map, for example, the historical world like we did in last Sifcast challenge, then you will wound up with one, two, maybe armada battleships, and you can just use that to kick anybody who's on the coast really hard. And It's difficult because those admirals are, I think, the only ones that actually give you units, and it's really difficult to time that perfectly with the time that they actually come around in the research tree as well, because they are so separate from each other.
Well, here's a maybe quick suggestion that you just made, you know, that statement made me think about is, I mean, and I don't know if the game would be programmed to handle this, but could you maybe have whatever ship it gives you as like a variable? Meaning, you know, hey, if you're at this tech, it's going to give you the highest you've researched in this area. So it's a frigate at the time because that's all you've learned instead of giving you a battleship. I mean, I wonder if that's a solution to it because it breaks a little bit of the realism. I mean, I'm not crying about it in any real way, but some people are upset, first of all. I mean, I saw people that were actually really upset about it and tweeting at the Civ game account saying that it broke their game play. But, you know, in a way, it kind of does, like you said, you know, you can really steamroll someone if you got a battleship way early on. And I guess you could make that your strategy, but if you're not even working for that as a strategy, it kind of comes out of left field and is just an awkward thing. I don't know. So I wonder if a variable would fix that. If you just say, hey, all you've learned is frigates, then that's all you can get.
The problem with that is that the admirals are actually catered specifically to that unit. For example, you have Yi Sun Xin that gives you an ironclad, and the reason why is because she used the first ironclads. So it kind of fits that you get an ironclad for that. Same as Thermoscales gives you a quadreme because that's what happened when he was alive. They had quadremes. And therefore, for example, if you use him when you can build battleships, then you can all of a sudden get a battleship out of him. It's a bit weird as well. But it might be a better solution than what you have right now. But I don't think it's actually that much of a big problem. You can use it to your advantage if you play towards it. But I don't think it breaks the game because, in my opinion, naval combat is still not that great.
Agreed. Hey, last question before we go into Dan's historical extra here. This can be for both of you, whoever wants to answer. Do you think we're going to see new great people added as time goes on? You used the word you got great people in your deck, which kind of brought to mind the idea that maybe we see some additional people added here and there. They're not above adding natural wonders and things like that. Do you think we end up getting any more great people overall?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not all great people that are currently in the game are in every game that you play. They select a couple based on the eras and stuff like that. So there is a random element in that. And that sets it up perfectly for adding more in the future.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that I'm surprised we haven't seen yet in any of the DLC. They've done a good job of integrating in, you know, the world wonders and the natural wonders and everything. So I would anticipate great people will come soon, probably. I'm telling you, with their first expansion, when I really think they're likely to roll out something to do with an overhaul in the government system, you'll probably start seeing some great people there, but likely before that too with DLC.
That's actually a great point. That'd be a great time to slap them in. If you're going to do something that changes up the government, curious if we see some, I mean, that would depend on how expansive they make that system, but yeah, I could see some great people coming that way. Dan, do you want to take it away with your historical extra this week?
Absolutely. In the spirit of Mother's Day, and I confirmed with Wouter that it is Mother's Day over in the Netherlands. I wasn't sure. Sometimes the holidays don't link up between North America and Europe, but this one I think is universal. We can all celebrate our mothers. I thought that I would give a shout out to our favorite mother in Civ 6, and that is Catherine de' Medici. Now, if you listen to early episodes, you'll remember that my Civ historical moment about her talked about how she, as queen regent and as queen, had a very, very key role in France during the French Wars of Religion, which were a turning point in French history. And one of the wonderful nuances I see in Civ 6 is the art stylings of the three crosses, which are on her black dress. And those three crosses represent the three sons of hers who were kings during her lifetime. Now, that is, of course, for a mother, a very sad thing that she would see the death of two of her sons and the ascension of a third. The funny thing about her three sons who were kings during her lifetime, Francis II, Charles IX, and Henry III, they were all big mama's boys, actually. And what I mean by that is Francis II, firstly, was known to not pass any sort of legislation without getting approval first from his mother. And actually, any piece of official legislation that he signed had to have a literal sign off from his mother that read, and I quote, let me just find the quote here, one sec. Da-da-da-da-da. The quote said, give me some musical interlude here. Here we go. Never mind. I got it. Every official act that Francis II signed would begin with, quote, this being the good pleasure of the queen, my lady mother, and I also approving of every opinion that she holdeth, and content and command that, so on and so forth. So basically saying, my mama told me to do this, and therefore I did it. Then after him, now Francis died at the age of 15. Charles IX came to the throne at 9 years old, and he was an even bigger mama's boy. It's said that when he first came to the throne, Catherine would sleep in his bed chamber and monitor him basically from a second to second basis, going with him, you know, around when he did everything that came with being a young king. It's also said that Charles IX wept at his coronation and asked for his mother to come closer to him as the crown of France was being placed on his head. So that speaks a little bit more to what a mama's boy he was. He died at a young age as well. And actually the third king under Catherine de' Medici was her son, Henry III, who was in Poland at the time. He was a grown man when he came to the throne. He also suffered from health issues and leaned heavily on his mother to guide him in terms of policy, which is another reason why the French Wars of Religion were so, tumultuous in this time, was because Catherine, of course, was a staunch Catholic, and she was very much against the French Huguenots, the French Protestants. And all three of her sons, being the mama's boys they were like, oh, what's that, Mom? You don't like the Protestants, the big, bad, mean Huguenots? Okay, well, we don't like them either. And that's a bit of a trivializing way to look at the French Wars of Religion and the thousands of people who passed away in them. But certainly on this Mother's Day, I thought I'd pay tribute to a woman who I know many people were a bit conflicted about her presence in the game as the leader of France, but has an important part in French history as a queen regent, as a governing queen, but more importantly, as a queen mother, and that voice in the ear of a trio of young sons whose kingship, well, we'll say was a bit tumultuous.
Ooh, that's very nice. I like that you managed to theme these all towards whatever holidays coming around or, you know, current. I'm very sad, though, that I didn't get to do my interlude music for you, Dan. So I'll
Just keep that to myself. Do it now.
No, it's gone. I'll save it for next time. That's fine. It wasn't anything. Voucher, do you have any strategy tips for us this week?
Yes, I do. I decided to talk a little bit today about how to become best friends with everybody in the world, because it's a common theme that we've been going over and over, and we have had some talk about it here and there. But still, when I read the Reddits, everybody's always like, why is everybody always angry at me? Why is everybody always wanting to declare war on me? I just want to be friends. And for most victory types, being friends is actually quite important, especially now with the Sifcast challenge going on as well. For cultural victory, you want to be friends with everybody. So how do you become friends? It starts, of course, with the first meeting, which means you can have a nice option to say to them or a less nice option. And I think even if you want to declare war on them, you always want to be nice just in case. And after that, as soon as you can, I would say go for a delegation with them. Usually you can't do this directly, and you can spike the relationship a little bit in your favor by setting a trade route or granting open borders towards them. You don't have to take open borders in return if you don't want to. You can even make them pay for it. But they want open borders. They will be really happy with those open borders. And you want to make some kind of deal with them as well, a trade deal that is a little bit in their favor. For example, they want to buy some luxury resources that you have. Just make them pay 1 gold per turn less or something like that, and they will love you for that. With those tiny little bits of work that you put towards making them happier, you will eventually tip the balance and become friends. And then is where the big party starts. And you can do quite a lot of things and they will not get angry at you anymore. A quick tip as well. You can forward settle somebody and they will say, don't do that again, which will give you a temporary penalty on your relationships. But if you actually manage to fulfill that promise towards them, it will yield a larger spike in positive relationships for the long run. So not pissing them off can be a good thing, but sometimes you need to put a little bit of stress on the relationship so that in the future you can have a better relationship forever.
I like it. That's a great tip, Valter. Especially, you know, I don't think a lot of people maybe realize how much that fulfilling that promise helps people out. So thank you both for bringing your awesome insights to the show, as always. We hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you got a chance, if you're a Patreon or a patron subscriber, in our cold open, you might hear us talk a little bit more about bringing the show over to YouTube and Twitch, which is getting ever, ever, ever closer. I mean, we're almost ready to pull the trigger on that. So really hoping that we get people that can join in live on the show and we can share more of these links on screen so people can actually see what we're looking at. So if you want to be a subscriber, want to help us reach that stretch goal, we are so close. We are over at patreon.com/civcast, nice and easy to find. Any links that you need to get the show to download via, you know, iTunes or Google Play or, you know, Android phone, whatever you want to do, even web players, that is all over at kyledebsterstudios.com/civcast. At the very bottom of the page, you can find a nice submission link if you want to send us your thoughts via an email system. Also, the email address to hit us directly with anything is civcastpodcast@gmail.com. I feel like we've done a lot of stressing of this, but please, please, please go sub to our subreddit, because people are having awesome conversations and really starting to build a cool community over there with a lot of different insights that we just don't come up with on our own. So that is, again, that'd be reddit.com/civcast. Nice and easy to find. I think I missed a slash in there, but it's easy enough to find for all you Redditors. And I think that, oh, Twitter, you know, hey, we have a Twitter account. That's a place and thing we do stuff over there. That's @civ_cast. I'm over there @KyleDempster7. Dan is there @DanTheMax. And Valter is there at Innocentia69. As a reminder on for our Patreon people, subscribers, patrons, whatever you want to call yourselves, Valter's strategy session is up there, and so is Dan's historical extra from last month. So check that out, and Dan and I will probably be recording a new historical extra in the next week or two, so that'll be something cool to look forward to. Until next time, everyone, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.